But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello, welcome to the Wealth Show podcast. My name is Sophie Downes, and today I'm joined by Georgie Ogilvie-Jones, Chief Investment Strategist at Magnus DFM. Welcome to the podcast, Georgie.
Thanks, Sophie.
So by way of introduction, Magnus was initially called MDFM and was launched by its advisory contingent Mutual Financial on the 11th of March 2020. The business later became Magnus in 2023 after it was acquired by Wren Sterling. So eager listeners will recognise that that launch date, the 11th of March, was just prior to the first lockdown being introduced in the UK by Boris Johnson. So quite an unusual time to be launching a new firm, and that is what we'll be discussing today. So, Georgie, could you talk me through what was going on behind the scenes and why you ultimately decided to go ahead and launch when you did?
Yes. Well, we'd been working on getting the DFM permissions through 4 months, and we truly believed that it was in clients' best interests. And really, when we came into such an uncommon period of time and such an uncertain period of time, the overriding thing was that it's crucial to be nimble in these kind of situations for investment markets, and the DFM permissions would allow that, so we decided to go ahead.
And how was it launching the business? How did you market and kind of grow that client base in those first few months?
The first few months, there was a lot of work around reassuring clients, because they were frightening times for a lot of people. Our advisors also got some new clients in those months who, you know, were impressed, I suppose, by our positioning and the strategy that we were following. But the real growth for Magnus came later on, after we were acquired by Wren Sterling, because that unlocked access to a much bigger advisor base, which is growing all the time through more acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. So what was the focus in the first few months then?
We had some logistical challenges, but it was nothing that couldn't be overcome. And the focus was really on monitoring the investments and making sure that we had got the best positioning, doing a lot of research, making sure we were underweight in areas like airlines, which were going to be the most affected by the shutdown, which we were, and that we continue to have a slant towards areas like tech, which would be less impacted by the lockdown.
Okay, so I think we're definitely going to come back to, you know, the investment side of this, but I think from an operations perspective, what were the challenges you faced in launching a firm in a period of such uncertainty?
Well, I think just things like if people needed to go into the office for client communications around onboarding them for the DFM, making sure that everybody was socially distanced, everyone was safe, and we were in line with the rules on that. So we did have those logistical challenges, but we were able to overcome those. Everyone had to get up the learning curve on using Teams and Zoom, things that we don't really think about using now, but that actually ended up being a real positive, because people could keep in touch daily whilst remaining safe at their own houses, could collaborate, and it was also great for the research and the monitoring in terms of being able to be in touch with the fund managers that we were using or that we were thinking of using.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there was, you know, some unexpected opportunities that maybe came about from launching in this, you know, quite unprecedented period.
Yes, absolutely. And that would really be the new ways of collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thinking about investments then, obviously lockdown, a lot of volatility in the markets. What did your portfolios look like when you launched, and what kind of changes did you make over the initial few months?
Well, when we launched, if we take a balanced portfolio as an example, had 25% in fixed interest, 25% UK equity, and the rest in global and regional equity. Markets always unravel very quickly. Hindsight's always 20/20, so perhaps we might have had a little more in fixed interest if we'd known exactly how quickly everything was going to happen. We did make the wise decision as an investment committee not to crystallise losses after the big crash, and to wait for recovery, which is something that's actually opportune to talk about right now with the tariff tantrum going on as well. So it's a similar sort of thought process, that you don't want to crystallise losses, that markets can turn extremely quickly after a very sharp correction, that nobody's got a crystal ball, so you can't really guess and try and cut in and out on market timing, and you could materially miss out on some gains if you miss the best days as markets start to come back, and there's a lot of empirical evidence around that historically. So we decided that we were going to stay in, and then of course there was the announcement that there would be quantitative easing and all kinds of fiscal initiatives to support things economically and support individuals through the lockdown. And that calmed markets immensely, and they began to turn quite quickly. So in the June that year, we did switch out of one fund, which was a mid-cap focused fund, and we decided that we would have broad exposure to the FTSE 100 instead through a tracker. And we also added a quality factor ETF within the global sleeve. Between the rebalance on the 2nd of June that year and the end of the year, the portfolios gained 7 to 12%. So it just goes to show how quickly things can turn around, and something for everyone to keep in mind right now after we've had a bit of a thump thanks to the time.
I mean, yeah, I suppose in any kind of period of volatility like we're seeing at the moment, you know, in conversations we have when we speak to investment firms, it's always, you know, taking that long-term approach, not making knee-jerk reactions. But obviously from the client side, there can be, you know, huge consternation and the want to make changes. So what were you seeing that in your client reactions? I know there was obviously the 10% rule that I'd like to talk about. How are you dealing with kind of relaying the volatility and ensuring that clients kind of knew it was best to stay the course?
Well, I'll take the question in two parts. We were very lucky with the 10% rule that was still in place at that time, but I think it was also some judgment rather than luck in that we were running with well diversified portfolios that were tilted towards more defensive funds, a lot of which had an income component, for example, in the equity sleeve. So that allowed us to be resilient, and within the model portfolio service, we didn't have to send out any 10% drop letters on any quarter. So we were fortunate in that, with that rule still being in place at that time. In terms of client conversations, understandably, in the early days, the beginning of February, and around the going into the beginning of March around launch, we did have some clients reaching out to our advisors, you know, who were dismayed. But I think when you bring in to play the sort of statistics that I touched on previously around, it's better to be in, don't just sell everything in a panic, wait for it to recover. You know, we can never guarantee what will happen in the future, but this is what's happened in the past. You know, you can show long-term charts, which for instance show the dot-com crash, show the global financial crisis, other periods of time where there have been sharp drops. But when you look at a very long line, you're not looking at anything so scary at all. And that's really what investing's about, is being in for the long term and building long-term gains.
So what was it like adjusting to the end of lockdown? What kind of challenges, if did you meet, if any, kind of adjusting out of it?
The challenge that we got on the investment side was that inflation began to take off. So that was more challenging for the fixed interest sleeve. And that was, we began to look at short duration and extra yield bonds then and introduce those types of strategies which have the potential to be more resilient in that environment. In terms of the business, well, we were through the learning curve and everyone was set up really well in terms of either hybrid working or in some cases primarily working from home, and that was one of the unexpected opportunities that people had a lot more flexibility around working because they didn't have travel time and perhaps, you know, on the personal side for people working at the business, it's allowed more work-life balance, which can only be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I think when people, you know, speak about COVID, it seems almost silly that we weren't having all of these kind of online meetings or making the use of it because the tech was there beforehand. I don't know if we've spoken before about this, but you saw a huge kind of shift, right, with COVID with that?
Yes, absolutely. And it's been the most helpful in terms of being able to engage with the fund managers because no one has to travel, you don't have to align schedules, and you can get a call where you can all see each other, which really helps with interaction. Even just hop on for 15-20 minutes if you've got a question about positioning or directionality.
From your perspective, did people just take to that quite simply, or was it, you know, like any new thing, some teething issues, some bumps in the road, some perhaps, I don't know, hesitancy to kind of engage with this new style of working with fund managers?
I think it had to be adopted incredibly quickly, simply because with the understandable restrictions on meeting in place, that was going to be the only way forwards for running a business and communicating, and in terms of on the asset manager side and being able to continue engagements with those on the buy side, if you like. I think once you got over the cringe gland of your kid wandering past with a nice lolly or something, you know, I think once you've got over that and you've got over the learning curve for actually getting things up and running, you know, that was actually quite a quick process, probably only a matter of weeks.
And I suppose in a way it's quite nice to see that human element that perhaps was missing a bit before. Would you say so?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, people really warm to each other when they can see a little more about them.
Okay, so I think it's worth talking about. So Mutual Financial, I suppose you were in quite a distinctive position in launching because you already had Mutual Financial as kind of your advisory side of things. So it was an extension of the business rather than launching, you know, a whole new company. Is that kind of correct?
That's right. So MFDM did sit as a separate company and had discretionary permissions, but it was the DFM business of Mutual Financial to serve the clients there and be agile, really, because if you think about the advisory way of doing things, if you make a decision at investment committee and then you've got to send switch letters out, you know, if you know, clients can see that you have made wise investment decisions in the past, they're more likely to trust you with it discretionary permission, and we know that there is an element of trust in that.
Mm-hmm. And going back to that process of launch, did you say it was 8 months in the running?
We'd been about a year, but yeah, 8 months really, hard graft getting the permissions through, etc. And you know, really, it was, if not now, then what other time would we do it? Because we quite clearly need to be agile in this environment.
Okay, so thinking maybe now, I think it's interesting to talk about launching in a period of such volatility when it's exactly what we're going through now. So I can't not ask about, you know, all the tariffs that are going on at the moment. How have you been positioning around that? Has that changed anything you're telling clients? Is it a direct kind of repeat of what you, maybe the conversations you were having during COVID?
The broad themes would be the same in terms of don't panic, stay invested. You don't want to miss out on the best days when markets come back. I mean, after a tough week, you know, we already saw a better day yesterday, for instance. There's always some nuance around each different bit of market volatility that you get. You know, this time, I think a lot of the focus will be around car makers or, say, steel companies, areas which are really hit by tariffs. And we've either got no exposure or very negligible exposure to that. We are coming up to our rebalance, and we had already made some decisions at committee before Liberation Day. So there's going to be some investment into equal weight US strategy, and we will be dialing up exposure to our most defensive large cap strategy. We are also investing in a fund that's just been launched by Pacific North South in the emerging markets area, which is a large cap strategy. We are already investing in their all cap emerging market strategy, so that's simply focusing on large cap, which is what we know has driven the returns in that fund. But sort of thinking around tariffs, we've already got exposure to areas that we think would have some insulation, if you like. So the Even Load Global Equity Fund, which is the one that we're going to dial up the exposure to, amongst the top holdings are payment processors. Now, they're not particularly going to be affected by tariffs. Europe relies on MasterCard and Visa. They don't have an equivalent payment company. You know, they do 80% of payments worldwide. So we're trying to look for areas like that which will be less impacted by the tariffs and make sure we got ample exposure there. The moment there isn't tariffs on pharmaceuticals, for example, so, you know, we run 4 to 8% exposure within that area in portfolios, so that's an area that you can point to clients that isn't going to be impacted in the equity sleeve.
And so thinking, I guess, in terms of regions, obviously Trump's been putting on different tariffs depending on where you are in the world. Is there particular reasons that you would rule out investment, or you'd think maybe you dial up? What's your thinking in terms, in regional terms?
We're going to stay diversified, but I think Asia Pacific would be the area that would come top of mind because of China, but there are strategies like Jupiter Asian Income, which doesn't have any exposure to China, and that's long-standing positioning in that fund. You've also got a situation where Vietnam and Taiwan are already at the table negotiating with the Americans, so if they can work something out there, well, that's going to be short-lived, so you certainly wouldn't want to rule out any particular country or region.
What's the UK story here? Is you know, obviously with the UK is facing a 10% tariff, which, you know, might make it a more attractive investment opportunity, or is this kind of more reason? I know there's a kind of consensual apprehension towards UK markets.
There has been for quite a while. I think the interesting thing about the UK is that if you look at the index level, there's ample exposure to areas like energy, which is something that will do well in quite an inflationary environment. So if tariffs were to bring inflation through, that would be one sector that you could point to that might be less impacted by that. There's also a lot of terrific domestic UK companies, and there's a lot of terrific domestic American companies. So we keep a diversified sleeve. We have three different US funds, and one of them has a good slug of domestically focused companies.
And I've, so in conversations I've been having with a lot of fund managers, they've been talking a lot about defensive strategies and turning more towards kind of alternative assets or, you know, fixed income, for example. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, we have exposure to an infrastructure fund, and we would expect that to potentially be a good diversifier. Fixed interest, we are continuing our slant towards shorter dated, and having had a look at the numbers in the last week, that's continued to be good positioning.
So final question, would you recommend launching a firm in lockdown from your own experiences?
Well, I would actually, because, you know, you go through something like that, it makes you really close with your colleagues, everybody pulls together, and there's a real sense of achievement that you got something out and away, and you know, you rose to a challenging environment and you found ways to do it.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Wealth Show. You've been hearing myself and Georgia Gilvey-Jones, Chief Investment Strategist at Magnus DFM. See you next week.
Today is VE Day. The boys
are the crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Marx Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Marx Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.